some historians and other writers of labor history credit Matilda's activities, this very first strike, with inducing Henry Ford to raise his workers' weekly wage to try to avoid the possibility of his workers organizing and joining a union.
That's Robin Legere Henderson, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Robin Legere Henderson is an artist, freelance curator, and exhibition consultant. She joins us to talk about Immigrant Girl, Radical Woman, a memoir from the early 20th century. The memoir was written by Henderson's grandmother, Matilda Rabinowitz, a pioneering labor organizer who passed away in 1963. Robin created original drawings to illustrate the memoir, as well as providing additional commentary for the publication. Robin, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
Now, this book is your grandmother's memoir, so tell us about her. She immigrated in 1900.
Yeah, she arrived at Ellis Island in New York Harbor on Christmas Day, 1900, with her mother and four siblings who had traveled from the Ukraine, which was then part of the Russian Empire, by trains across Europe, and then they embarked from Glasgow in Scotland, which was a little unusual at the time, I think.
So tell us a little bit about her growing up experience, and how did this lead to her becoming a labor leader?
Well, first of all, I think they left Russia because of the restrictions against Jews in that part of the world at that time. And they were circumscribed in where they could live. They were restricted to mostly workers, working class jobs. They weren't allowed to become professionals. They were conscripted into the Tsar's army, but they didn't have the rights of ordinary citizens. And just physical existence, food and housing and all the things that people need to live became harder and harder for the family. So many, many, many people in their condition left Europe at that time for the United States or more industrialized parts of Europe, England and Germany particularly. And when my grandmother arrived, she was 13 years old, didn't speak English at all, but immediately had to go to work in the garment industry of New York City because the family could not make ends meet without the help of the children. And not only she, but her two brothers that were closest to her in age were also sent to work as newsboys. And sometimes her father lost his job and had to look for new work. And the mother turned ties at home doing piecework in the family kitchen. So my grandmother told me that she knew better than to think that the streets were paved with gold, as some people said. But she did expect a little cottage with a white picket fence. And instead, she got the tenements of New York City. So I think between having to go to work as a child and the horrible conditions that greeted them and it just the living conditions in New York radicalized her. And as time went on, in her late teens and early 20s, she joined the Socialist Party. And from the Socialist Party, she became introduced to the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, and she became a passionate advocate for workers' rights.
She was a leader in the 1912 Little Falls textile strike. Tell us about that.
That was her maiden voyage as a strike organizer for the IWW, and she was 24 years old. My grandfather, to whom she was not married. In fact, he was married to someone else with two kids. But he and my grandmother were involved romantically, which was somewhat scandalous at the time. Quite scandalous, actually. And he got arrested immediately as soon as the strike started in Little Falls. It's in upstate New York on the Mohawk River. And part of that long rust belt now along the Erie Canal, which was, you know, massively industrialized during the time that my grandmother was there and from early in the 20th century. So she bravely was sent by the IWW to take my grandfather's place, and she just plunged into the battle, and I think it was one of the peak experiences of her life because she writes about it so vividly. And I visited Little Falls in doing research for this book, and it's a lovely little city on the Mohawk River. It's about half the size that it was in population when my grandmother was there, but it's seen better days. It used to be an industrial site, and now it's, you know, struggling economically like so much of that part of the country.
Now, you were there for a commemoration of the 100th anniversary of that strike. Tell us about that.
That was so exciting because the people in the Historical Society in Little Falls decided to commemorate the strike as part of their, you know, their celebrating of the city's history. And I thought it was very unusual for a small town that has a Revolutionary War and French and Indian War history, and that would be normally, it would seem to me, what they would focus on. But there are so many people that live in that area whose grandparents and great-grandparents were involved in the strike and remembered being told about it as children and was part of their family's personal history. And it was really a very important part of the town's history as well. So they did an amazing job commemorating the strike. They had reenactors in various sites where activities during the strike happened. They showed us the sites of places. Sometimes the buildings were gone, but they still knew the location of the area. But the most exciting for me was that I discovered through additional research that the tenement house that still stands, that was across the street from the place where I was staying with friends, was the very place that my grandmother had lived in in a striker's attic during her months in Little Falls. It was wonderful to see these people commemorating union and strike activity. I thought very unusual for a small town.
Your grandmother also had a role in the first auto industry strike.
Yes, and that's probably the thing that she's best known for by labor historians and others. She led the very first auto industry strike at Studebaker in Detroit in 1913. She stood on a soapbox, and at that time, the Studebaker plant, which is now gone, but then was right next door to the Ford assembly plant, which still stands, and it's a little museum there now. So I think that some historians and other writers of labor history credit Matilda's activities, this very first strike, with inducing Henry Ford to raise his workers' weekly wage to try to avoid the possibility of his workers organizing and joining a union. And it's funny because Matilda Rabinowitz was my grandmother's name, and she doesn't talk about very much about this strike, except she does tell us that she was arrested, and she kind of makes light of her arrest because the charges against her were obstructing traffic. And my grandmother was 4'10". The photo in the Detroit Free Press at the time shows the policeman towering above her as he's making his arrest. And it's just ludicrous to imagine this tiny little thing obstructing anything physically.
How old were you when you became aware that your grandmother was an important figure in the labor movement?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I knew that she cared about these things all my life. From the time I can remember talking about what was going on in the world, I knew that she was an activist and an advocate for workers' rights, an advocate for women's rights, a socialist, and so opposed to a lot of the things that were going on in our country. She was very much a champion of civil rights as well. But I think it was only many years after she died, when I had reread the memoir a number of times, that I realized, my goodness, this is really important history. Now, my mother recognized it much earlier. As soon as my grandmother was gone, she started going through her papers. And when we came across this memoir, she said, you know, this is very, very important. These papers are very important. I'm going to send them to Wayne State, to the labor archive there at the Walter Reuther Library, and that's where they've sat for many, many years, since the 60s. I didn't realize it till I was probably in my mid-20s, early 30s, how really important this was.
Your grandmother originally wrote this memoir for family, but you decided that this is a story that needed to be shared with the world.
Yes, yes, I did. And I struggled for a long time trying to figure out how to present the material because it was only 100 pages. Now, it was typed, so it was, you know, dense. And my grandmother taught herself typing in shorthand in her 30s so that she could get out of menial sweatshop labor and became a white-collar worker. But I struggled with how to present this material, and I wanted to add to it because I had found some things that I thought amplified the story and made it easier to grasp. And for some reason, it didn't occur to me until probably about 5 or 6 years ago. My goodness, I'm an artist. I could illustrate this. And that would flesh it out, and that would also lend some visual support to the material. And I didn't, there are photographs, a few family photographs, and I found a few in the archives. So I based a lot of my drawings on those archival things that I had or could find. But a lot of it I had to imagine. And so my travels to various parts of the country, where Matilda talks about in her memoir, having conducted strikes or engaged in other kinds of political activities, or where she grew up, I found that really an important avenue for my understanding and my kind of grasping of the physical characteristics of the places where she was. And there's a lot of architecture that's still standing. And then I used newspapers a lot and other kinds of documentation to get the costumes right. I really wanted historical accuracy in the drawings. And that's one reason why Cornell University Press, I think, decided that this was a worthy project for them to take on.
Your grandmother's story as an immigrant is, you know, well over 100 years old now. But do you think that part of what she experienced still resonates with what immigrants go through today?
Oh, my goodness, yes. That was one of the reasons that I felt it was an important thing to put out now. Because her immigration story is so reminiscent of the stories you hear now of people from Central America that are coming north, or people that are trying to get here from war-torn and violence-riven places in Africa and the Middle East. I mean, the stories are so, the danger of the travel and the horrible conditions that they're trying to get away from are very, very much like what's happening to people who are trying to flee violence now. So I thought that was an important part of the story. And I also felt that my grandmother was a feminist. She didn't believe in marriage. And she bravely decided to have a child, even though she didn't have a husband. And she always took great pride in the fact that she could earn a living that would support herself and her child, even in the midst of being what would have been if people had been more aware that she wasn't divorced. She put herself in a precarious social position as well. And she often did with her thinking, too, her support for labor, her support for civil rights, her opposition to war. She was very much a person that you would feel you might have alliances with today.
Robin, thank you very much for talking with me today.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for being interested in Matilda's work.
The book is Immigrant Girl, Radical Woman, a memoir from the early 20th century by Matilda Rabinowitz. The book is illustrated by Robin Legere Henderson. More interviews on a wide variety of topics are available at kpr.ku.edu/conversations. You can also use our KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.